In this episode, I'm speaking with Sheila Olson and James Lehr, who are the authors of Wise Decisions, a science-based approach to making better choices. This is one of the best books I've read in a long time. The approach they take in training our brains so we make better decisions is both easy to understand and easy to apply. Cue the music.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 307 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. In this episode, I'm speaking with Sheila Olson and James Lehr, who are the authors of Wise Decisions, a science-based approach to making better choices. This is one of the best books I've read in a long time. The approach they take in training our brains so we make better decisions is both easy to understand and to apply. Let me read you their bios. Dr. Jim Lehr, co-author of Wise Decisions, is a world-renowned performance psychologist, co-founder of the Human Performance Institute, and author of 18 books, including The Only Way to Win. He has also co-authored the national bestseller, The Power of Full Engagement. Dr. Lehr is well known for his individual work with top-flight athletes and Olympians. He holds a master's and doctorate in psychology, serves on several scientific boards, and is a full member of the American Psychological Association, and has been inducted into three halls of fame. You can learn more at www.jim-lehr.com. Dr. Sheila Olson, co-author of Wise Decision, is a behavioral geneticist. She is a senior scientist at the Institute of Applied Research in Youth at Tufts University, a visiting assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins University School of Education, and an adjunct assistant professor of pediatrics at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. A former professional tennis player, she earned a BS in finance from the University of Colorado Boulder, obtained a charter financial analyst designation, held an investment career as a portfolio manager. She earned a doctorate in behavioral genetics from the Social Genetic and Development Psychiatry Center at King's College London. You can learn more at www.SheilaOlsonWalker.com. This is when I would normally tell you about the Career Pivot community, our sponsor, but this is a rather long interview at about 43 minutes. I didn't want to edit it down because it contains so much good information in it. In fact, I would recommend listening to it a couple of times. Therefore, let's get right down to my discussion with Sheila Olson and James Lehr. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the real joy of having Sheila Olson Walker and Jim Lehr, and they are the authors of Wise Decisions, a scientific-based approach to making better choices. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
As we said before, I really like the book. I really like the framework of how to make decisions, how to make better decisions. Who should read this book?
Well, it's a book written for adults, but particularly adults who touch the lives of young people. So it's a multi-generational book, but it's written for adults, or you know, for a kind of a layperson audience. We are both translational scientists, Jim and me, And our hope is that in adults reading and taking in some of the principles we write about in the book, they can unpack their own decision-making process, which most people haven't done. Even very successful decision makers just know intuitively how they make decisions because of how they've grown up and watched the people around them, the important people in their lives making decisions. But unpacking the process and having some structure around it, we, Jim and I believe, can be very, very helpful. And then in terms of children, I know this is not a podcast around children. I'm a developmental scientist. I'm a behavioral geneticist. And really, children learn more by watching than listening. You know, the quote, don't worry that your kids aren't listening to you, worry that they're always watching you. So our hope is by reaching the adult audience, that they will be able to help reach the youth audience. And Jim and I are on the board of something called the Youth Performance Institute that is really all about activating the gifts in young people. And this is our first starting point on creating a content curriculum to send out to a broader audience.
Yeah, we had really hoped that this would connect with parents, with teachers, with coaches, a lot of people who deal with young people. And we really wanted to put the decision-making process under a microscope. There's been very little really written, scientifically for sure, about how decisions are made, what area of the brain is actually active, and how does this actually, you know, the process, how can we become more intentional and understand exactly the process of making great wise decisions as opposed to those that have actually proven to be kind of catastrophic and in some cases we regret for a lifetime. So we're quite surprised when we did the literature search and went in and we found that very little attention is given to this issue of decision making with parents. They don't know how to teach it to their kids. No one taught it to them. Very little emphasis in graduate schools, very little emphasis in the corporate training arena. Yet when you look at maybe the most important asset that a human being has is the ability to make good decisions that withstand the test of time. And kids, one bad decision to take a drug, an experimental drug, or to drive drinking too much, or to, you know, just kind of do something instinctively and not really think about it, and then all of a sudden realize, how the heck did I get myself involved in that? And that's why we really, really push the envelope in this book.
One of the first chapters is you talk about the four types of health and decision making. What are the four types of health and how do they affect your decision making?
Well, health is fundamentally an integrative entity, an integrative process, and the same molecules that affect our mind affect our body. So if we look at mental health, physical health, emotional health, and Jim is well known for his pyramid where spiritual health is atop everything else. And really that's our higher order values and beliefs, our why, what we really believe is important in life. And our sense of purpose and belonging really lie in this realm. So all of these things, being healthy physically, being well-rested, hydrated, eating the proper nutrition, having the different, you know, self-care factors in our lives, good friends that we can rely on who love us for who we are, that's very important. And then emotional health plays into this as well, being able to be in a good space. We all know what it's like trying to make a decision under duress or when we're stressed. When we're stressed, the purview tends to narrow. We get rigid in our decision-making. We get more reactive often or shut down. But when we're rested and have the ability to be in a good kind of multidimensional healthy space, we just have more capacity to make decisions. Our mental health is in a balanced place. And of course, this is all driven by our spiritual health and really unpacking what those beliefs and values are. What do we care about the most? Who do we want to be at the very end of the line? How do we want to be remembered by the people who care about us the most? And in the book, Jim and I talk about a 360-degree data set, you know, really being able to draw on all these different sources of wisdom. The body wisdom is one that often gets overlooked. That gut feel instinct, it can be, you know, a tight chest or, you know, sweaty palms or, you know, just a sense of a, you know, kind of gut ache. Or it can, you know, it can, these, you know, emotions really are data when it comes down to it. And there's a lot of neuroscience on it and epigenetic science. So really being able to unpack what our emotional selves are telling ourselves about the decision over the long term. So we just make better decisions when we act rather than react, and being in a healthy, rested, balanced place and having our sense for what's important for us over the long game all help us make decisions that are more likely to be just that over our lives.
Just say that, you know, in a span of 15 minutes, you can make 15 or more decisions and you're not even aware. Most people are completely oblivious to how many decisions you have made in the last hour. A lot of them are so seemingly insignificant, like what program are we going to watch now, or shall I eat now or shall I wait till later? But a lot of these are just, they're so automatic. We don't really think about where is this process being vetted? Where in the brain is this, this 360 data set being referenced, if there is a reference? And we've learned that inside all of us is this kind of advisor that's really coaching us as to how to respond in a given situation. It's called your own decision advisor. And we all have that. And sometimes that advisor is giving terrible, terrible counsel. And others it's really magnificent. There's the sophistication, the perspective, and it's because their Yoda has been preloaded with the right stuff. So a major part of the book is to equip this inner voice with whatever is necessary to bring together all the assets that are necessary to make a wise decision. And some decisions should be very intentional. You should not just fly off and just check with your gut or check with this or that, or this, what does your logical brain tell you here? We need to have an fully integrated process of making decisions. And if we're out of sync emotionally, we call it hot. If you're hot either with negative emotion or hot with positive emotion, you should probably postpone that decision, because the decision will likely be colored. And when we go back and look at the evidence on when people make their worst decisions, it's when they're terribly tired, not feeling well, or when emotionally they're totally in a place that has clouded their ability to see things clearly. So we ask people to wait, go for a nature walk, go outside and maybe talk with friends, maybe sleep 24 hours before making that decision, because so much is riding on the outcome.
Yes, your own decision advisor, your Yoda. I love your Yoda acronym. My favorite chapter in the book is Voices in Your Head. Because boy, we got plenty of those.
We do.
But what I really liked was the inner voice 1 and 2 and the inner and public voice.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Inner voice 1, we know that we all have a voice that's kind of coaching us, and that may be the most important coach we'll ever have. And that voice, we're learning, is really the accumulation of all the inputs from all the people, authority figures and important people in an individual's life as they're growing up. And eventually that forms kind of their own little private narrative. It's like, this is how I speak to myself, because this is how people have spoken to me. And there's evidence that that voice actually begins forming prenatally, where the auditory cortex of the child is actually sending messages through the fetus, through the, you know, the womb, it is actually picking up these signals. And then somewhere between 4 and 5 years of age, there, this primitive voice starts showing up and people start realizing, I've got this voice in my head or voices in my head. And the more they begin to realize that this is a voice that actually plays a critical role in their ability to navigate in life, the raw voice that is maybe very, very untrained, almost instinctive, we'll call inner voice one. And it may be crude, rough. It may be, maybe, you know, the voice of a father or a mother who was not that really conscious of their own speaking voice to you or to the child. And all of a sudden you have that in your voice. And it's really an unbelievable critic. It's not, it's a dysfunctional coach, let's put it that way. Sometimes you have great parents and great people around you, and that inner voice one is pretty healthy. Inner voice two is the transformation of whatever that voice that was given to you into something that's extraordinarily positive and constructive and wise. And so all of us have to kind of work with that voice, because that inner voice is the closest to the command center where decisions are made. Neuroscience hasn't given us exactly the location, but we know the human insula is a critical player in accessing all these different regions of the brain that are so crucial in decision-making, all the subcortical regions of the brain, all the emotions and all of the primitive amygdala and so forth, all the cortex and the neocortex, the executive functions are instinctive mechanisms, this what we call this often this intuitive sense of intelligence. But all of these and all these sensory portals, these five sensory portals, are feeding in information. We want Yoda to have access to that, particularly in those big moments. And so making a real quick decision as to whether I should leave or I should change my job or I should move to a new city, boy, that requires a lot of careful processing. And we want people to understand there is a way to get to the best decision. You will not always make a great decision, but it will be the best you can do. And you were the most responsible you could be in getting it to the place that you felt, I'm willing to kind of go with this and maybe even bet the farm on it.
And if I can alley-oop Jim on that great description of IV1 and IV2, the optimistic message that science gives us, the science of epigenetics, neurobiology, is that nurture is always shaping nature. And as we want to develop a new mindset or new process around decision-making, a new way of making meaning out of situations that may be hard, that lead us in a positive direction, so that inner voice can become a coach rather than an inner adversary, that Yoda that we all want is really going to help guide us in this, in the right direction that is aligned with our long-term values and beliefs. Science tells us that is possible. What it takes is repetition, and consistently reminding ourselves and acting on, you know, the data that we have to be able to really synthesize all of those pieces, taking a pause so we act rather than react. And over time, just like going down to the gym and lifting weights to build our biceps, these neural pathways become fortified and become, you know, more like the neural superhighways rather than the country lane roads. They become the path of least resistance, and it's just what we do. So this is all entirely possible. It just takes practice and dedication.
So that's the inner voice. What about the public voice?
So the public voice, it's so interesting. You and I and Sheila are communicating with our public voice. It's much easier to conceal what you really are thinking and feeling with your public voice than your private voice. Who you really are, really, it's closest to the core of you when I get, you know, how you're actually coaching yourself or thinking about yourself or thinking in the moment. And if your inner voice is consistent and aligned with your deepest values and beliefs, and that inner voice is also aligned with your public voice, what actually starts to happen is you come across as being very sincere, very authentic, very genuine. That's why we hate politicians, because they become so practiced at saying what you want to hear. And once they're in office, their private voice takes over. And all of a sudden, you realize what they were saying to you was really, it was a scam. And so we love being around people. Even if we don't like what they say publicly, we can trust them because they are saying what they really feel on the inside. And so with this training, we're trying to get our private voice, our public voice aligned with what we feel are the most important values and beliefs that kind of will steer us to what we call sometimes getting home in life, getting to the end of our life where we want to end up. So it's really an interesting strategy that we found very helpful at the Human Performance Institute, where we had hundreds of thousands of people go through the institute in Orlando. There's a voice memo capability on most iPhones, and you can coach yourself with your own public voice. So your public voice, you kind of get a script that you really think is fantastic, and you coach yourself. All coaching is trying to get to the inner voice. The inner voice is the master controller, is the master storyteller, controls all the gates about who gets into this command center and who doesn't. The power broker in your life is your inner voice, the voice that no one else hears but you. But one of the powerful ways to get that inner voice aligned with what you want in a constructive way is to actually coach yourself with your public voice. So it's your public voice coaching your private voice to be more of a constructive advisor, a better Yoda in guiding you throughout life.
And there is neuroscience evidence also that coaching yourself in your you voice, like Sheila, you need to, you know, do this. You need to, you know, focus on putting an hour aside to have, you know, some concerted writing time. You need to wake up at this time to go to the gym. The you voice rather than the I voice tends to be more effective and stickier because it, you know, somewhere in the brain, there is a process going on that is a kind of a higher level of authority, like there's an external person saying it to you. So the you voice versus the I voice has been shown to be more effective in coaching ourselves with our public voices.
Yeah, I like the concept of just simply understanding that I have my public voice and I have my inner voice. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of a book called Positive Intelligence, which talks about having two sides of the brain, the wise side and the saboteur side, and learning how to manage that. Mm-hmm. And managing the messaging, because you have a whole bunch in here, like protecting your inner core. But I thought where we'd go next is, because we're talking about your inner voice, is the managing of energy and your inner voice. Can you talk to that?
You know, it's so interesting. We probably one of the big paradigm shifts that we came to at the Institute that I think has actually made a massive difference in people's lives, that we were all taught to believe that the most important asset that we have, most important reset that we have in our lives, resources, is really time. And that, you know, whole time management industry, billion-dollar industry was formed that helped us to get to the understanding that we just have to use our time better. And if you use your time better, you're going to have a more successful life. In fact, I confronted Stephen Covey and Stephen M.R. Covey with this. Stephen M.R. Covey was on our board, the son of Stephen Covey. And I said to many of them, or both of them many times, that the entire time management industry is flawed because it's predicated on a flawed premise. And that is that if you want to have a successful life, the most important thing you need to do is to figure out what really matters to you, figure out what your values are, your beliefs. Once you do that, then you need to courageously begin to carve up time and to strategically invest time and all those things and people and parts of your life that matter most to you. And in doing so, you'll have a successful life. And I said, is that pretty close, Stephen? And he said, that's right on the money. And I said, that's 100% false. Time has no valence, has no energy, has no force. What you have to understand, it's not how long you live. It's the energy you bring to the time that you have aligned with the mission. And that the thing that actually moves everything, as Einstein said, nothing moves until energy causes it to move. It's the intersection of time and energy that makes everything happen. But the sacred union is that taking energy from my body and allowing it to somehow connect to this moment in time, I invest energy and time in making something happen. So the most important resource we have as human beings is our energy. And energy investment spawns life. Everything you give your energy to is actually going to cause growth, whether it's biceps or whether it's kindness or gratefulness. And the more you understand that this is the asset you have to protect, we have to figure out how to renew energy. It's not an infinite resource. We have to constantly renew it physically, emotionally, mentally, and even spiritually. And if we don't do that, we call that oscillation. The oscillatory principle of life is expending and then recovering. And in that energy recovering and energy expenditure is the pulse of life. You know, all biopotentials in the human system are oscillatory. Nothing is a straight line except death. We really predicate this whole notion of energy management. We bring it to the top of the heap, because that's really basically how we make things happen in life, is the investment of energy. And the more we can equip Yoda with that intelligence, with that understanding, Yoda will make better decisions. You don't want to make a decision when you're completely depleted of energy, when you are struggling even to take a breath, when you know that there's just a lot of other demands that have to be met, and you have multiple things that you have to do. Don't make your decision now. Make sure that you have the energy and the right energy. And we know that the energy valence that you have, whether it's positive or negative, high or low, all of those make a big difference in decision-making.
I think you said it beautifully. Read The Power of Full Engagement, Jim's New York Times bestseller. He talks all about this basic issue, energy. It's the driving force in what we have capacity to do. And we've all been sitting at our desks where we're sitting here and we're focused on a task, but we're low energy that day. So the time is here, but we're not thinking well, or we're not able to produce in the same way that we could otherwise. So really understanding, ourselves, how things work most efficiently within our own integrated mind-body systems, and prioritizing, aligning tasks that we have to do with those energy flows, and making sure that we also make time for proper rest and recovery is vital. But Jim said it all beautifully right there.
I would say one more thing, and that is that we become obsessed with investing time with people. And, you could invest time and the goal might be to show people how much you care. But when we put a camera on you and looked at how you treated others during that time, you were irritable, cranky, you were multitasking, you were on your iPhone. And the mission was to help them know how much you care about them, because you devoted 4 hours to them nonstop. But when you look at the return for the investment, you got a reverse return. They really felt that you didn't care that much about them. You'd have been better off spending that time in the office and just spending 10 minutes with them fully engaged. Yep. So we really have a lot of work to do. And Yoda has to be very, very acutely aware of this intersection of time and energy. The greatest gift we have to give to the world is our full engagement, our full and best energy right here, right now. And that's how you show you care. And that's what people want.
Having gone through burnout twice in my career, and knowing that I needed to take the time and recover rather than rush back into something the next. The last thing I want to cover before we get into training strategies is you have a whole chapter on emotions versus feelings and how it affects your decision making. So what's the difference between emotions and feelings?
Well, emotions are the embodiment, you know, of our emotions. Our emotions are embedded in our organ system, our viscera, the cells in our bodies. We feel our emotions. They're a felt sense of something that we're thinking about, that we're processing at a body level. How I feel about something is the external expression of that. So let's say, for instance, I'm feeling stress, and when I get stressed, my chest gets a little bit tight. That the emotion, I can feel the stress in my body is, you know, the tight chest, but the emotion that I'm feeling is stress. And so on the inside, we don't have as much control over that element of it. But on the outside, the expression of it, recognizing that it's happening is very important, because like anything else in life, if we're not aware we're doing something or aware of a mood state that we're in, we don't have any capacity to do anything about it. So given that feelings and emotions, you know, are sort of the priming of the canvas, of the cognitive canvas for everything we do and how we show up in life, it's important to be in touch with what our emotions are, our feelings are, and to be able to unpack them a little bit and make meaning out of situations based on how we're feeling in a moment. So for instance, if I'm feeling stressed and there's a situation going on, I have the ability to just say, you know what, I'm stressed right now. It's not a good time to make a decision. I'm feeling kind of the narrow purview. I need time to breathe. Breath strategies are incredibly effective. So our lungs are portable. They're with us everywhere. But just pausing to take a moment to think, you know, I need more time to process all this, and I want to act rather than react. And so feelings can drive us to be impulsive sometimes. But they're an incredibly important data source, because sometimes feelings tell us things and emotions tell us things that we're not getting from an intellectual standpoint, you know, these sort of gut feelings about things that persist. And it's important to have time and space. For me, kind of time and space out of the house in nature, you know, with the big open sky, in spaces where there are there's nothing pulling me to be anywhere or think about anything else. I can really be with my feelings and reflect on a decision that I'm trying to make. You know, those are the basic distinguishment. They're interrelated, feelings and emotions, but they're an incredibly important data source, particularly when making big decisions that affect not only us, but the people in our lives that we love, our family, our friends, and our decisions that can really have an impact for, you know, decades out into the future.
You know, our cortex and neocortex of the brain is the new kid on the block. And the wisdom in the body that has been around for hundreds and thousands of years has been really how Homo sapiens actually learned to navigate in life, where they trusted emotions and feelings. And we've seen the research that if you just make decisions based on pure logic and analysis, you can make when that part of the brain that's responsible for emotional information is damaged, you think, well, this will help you make better decisions. The exact opposite is true. And the very same thing is true if we have someone who's had their cognitive capabilities damaged for whatever reason, and they just make decisions based on emotion. That's also a catastrophe. So we have to value all the assets and bring all those to the forefront when Yoda is making some very basic recommendation about what you should do in this situation. And that's why it takes a little bit of time pausing between that stimulus and response, which is a sacred space. And that's what makes it intentional, is that I want to make it right, and I don't want to just make it off the cuff, because so many things can actually cascade in the future from one bad decision.
And it's important, one more thing on this, and this is back to the developmental piece, how we grow into who we are, understanding where some of these feelings might come from. So we wire up around the people around us when we're younger, when children and adolescents, we wire up around the adults that are a major presence in our lives. And so being able to really take a step back and really process, I mean, is this truly how I feel, or is this something that, you know, was taught to me early on that I just really never took time to vet, is an important piece as well. So really taking time to go back to ourselves, reflect on major topics of importance and trying to understand it. Is this really my belief and my feeling about it? Or is it something that I learned that I just always took as my own, but never took time to vet it fully for myself?
That's really a great point that Sheila is making there, that, you know, we get all these voices in our head. We have the voice of our mother, our father, all these authority figures, family, other siblings. And we want you to find your own voice. We want you to form your advisor is kind of uniquely you. And so a lot of the work in the book, Wise Decisions, is about really understanding how that voice is formed and how do you get that voice to resonate so that it is really your voice and you're not running your life on someone else's voice.
Oh, I so understand that. My parents are long gone. My parents were very old when I was born, the mid-1950s. My mom and dad were both close to 40. And I still have programs that my mother put in my brain that plays. The last thing I want to talk about is you have a chapter on training Yoda and training strategies. How do we train Yoda so we make better decisions?
Yoda is learned. It's learned these very primitive impulses that occur very early in life, and they start developing into a kind of a series of voices, maybe. And some of them are very perplexing. Some of them don't really, you know, sure why you're saying these terrible things to yourself. You don't even know where it comes from. And this is what we refer to in the context of inner voice one. And then we have to think about how do we take this often dysfunctional or sometimes dysfunctional inner voice and create something that, if it were projected onto a jumbotron in a football stadium, and it really showed how you were coaching yourself in this moment, you would be very proud. It's the same way you would coach yourself if you were coaching someone that you deeply cared about in the same situation. And so you're actually coaching yourself with the very best voice that you could possibly give, because that's the voice you would give to people you care about. And so often that is not how people coach themselves. So, and that voice needs to, there needs to be an awareness. So one of the chapters in the book is really digging deep into the awareness of how you are speaking to yourself. How are you speaking to yourself about just about every aspect of your life? What kind of coach are you to yourself? And if the coach is actually not the kind of coach you would like to have in your life, then you make a commitment to change that. And in changing that, you're going into a training program. And that training program will take you into a variety of things that are outlined in the book to really help you make better decisions. A very wise and effectively uploaded Yoda brings all the best assets you have to your decision-making process. And one of the things that we learned was two things, and Sheila maybe wants to talk about this Yoda code and the seven lenses that we use to help people understand how do we make sure that we're getting it right. And both of those, I think, are really important training strategies. You want to talk about those, Sheila?
Sure. I mean, we set up the book to be a, you know, partly translational science, partly just the reading, then partly exercises, as you've seen. And one thing that we write about is the Yoda code, which is it's similar to the tombstone exercise in many ways, but it really is choosing five or six words that best describe how we want those who know us the best and love us the most, how we want to be remembered by those people, how we want to show up in everyday circumstances, rain or shine, you know, the things that are the very most important to us. Do we want to be loving and kind and courageous, and have integrity, be generous and grateful? those are all examples of words based in character that define how we want to show up. And so really, again, taking time to reflect and unpack what those things are for us, what our highest values and beliefs are, and how we want to be with those we love the most, which transcends, you know, any kind of external elements in our lives, you know, the bank accounts and houses and you know, the experiences, just who we are as human beings, you know, versus human doings. And so the Yoda Code, kind of landing on what those things are for us and posting them, you know, putting them in a place where you see them every single day. I've got a sticky note in the kitchen window and one in my bathroom mirror, and they keep me on track. And for me, you know, good day or bad day, when I can live those values, I've done the best that I can do, because life is complicated, right? And some days things go off track, and all we have is the ability to make a judgment call, make a decision in the moment, and
These are reminders for Yoda.
They're reminders for Yoda, exactly. And show up in the very best way that we can, in a manner that is aligned with how we really want to be. So there are also various lenses, the 7 lens process that we write about, and this is best self, best moral self. You know, looking at a decision from a year out, 5 years out, 10 years out, you know, taking a different chronological perspective on a decision we're going to make, just to think about how is it that we want to reflect back on this decision in the end. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, it's hard to, when we're in the current moment looking out, it really is a helpful, valuable perspective to look back, to think about how certain outcomes might play out. And the final thing is, we write about our Yoda advisory board, and having a handful of people, not a large group of people, but just a small group of people that you really trust, that we can go to, that we respect how they make decisions and how they think about things and their values. And we're very aligned with them in terms of our priorities in the world, who we want to be as human beings, and talk about the decisions, just vet it. And take them out of the closet and into the light of day, and write about it, process it. You know, writing really helps engage the default mode network in a unique way. So it's much more whole brain than just thinking. And all of these things take us through a process that can be, you know, doesn't necessarily happen in you know, in a couple of minutes. Sometimes it takes hours, days, months, you know, even years to make a big decision. But the more that we can take it out, take it, run it through a process, really think about how it aligns with the most important things to us in life, and run it by the people that we trust the most. That's the best we can do, because as Jim said, we can't see around the corner in life. All decisions are not going to be perfect. All we strive to do is make the best possible decision with all of it available data sources at the present moment. That's just the best we can do as people.
One of the things that we really emphasize that is kind of surprising for people is that we have a lot of decisions that seem to be absolutely inconsequential, little tiny things. And yet, when we looked at how the bad decisions ultimately are made, they often are connected to bad little decisions that were made that kind of led to that. That sometimes our most powerful levers for making big changes are these little tiny choices that we make that seem to be kind of unimportant in the moment. So staying up late at night to watch a movie may compromise your ability to make a great decision later on, or not, you know, taking care of yourself physically. If you make a lot of choices, let's say you're going into retirement, and you make a fair number of choices that seem to be at this point in your life pretty inconsequential, it may affect your ability to have the retirement that you want, because now your health is not that great. So these little health decisions actually accumulated and now have compromised your ability to make great choices that you would really like to make in retirement, because you really didn't think they were that important in the moment. So we have to kind of consider all decisions important, And we want to make Yoda in really a key position for deciding what are we going to habituate, make automatic, and what are the things that we always want to take a moment and reflect, because the outcome is just too important.
And to add on to that, relative to our opening chapter, on health and how health ignites wise decision-making, making those wise decisions on our self-care, around taking care of ourselves, those are fundamental, because those things can very easily spiral. They grow, they sort of cascade into a big snowball, and they can really hijack our capacity to be level and grounded and be able to act rather than react when making decisions. So the little ones add up to the big ones, and this is evident across the decision-making literature. So being vigilant, knowing our Yoda code, and taking good care of ourselves is key.
Just sitting here talking to you, I love your book even more. If someone wanted to reach out and contact you and obviously buy your book, how might they do that?
So we both have websites. I'll give you mine. But in terms of buying the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent booksellers. Thank you for anyone who does want to reach out and buy a book. My website is SheilaOlsonWalker.com. That's Sheila, SheilaOlsonWalker.com.
And Sheila's on LinkedIn. She's on all the websites, so you can also get a lot of her information there. My website is Jim-Lehr, LOEHR.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, and a lot of the videos and all the podcasts and things are there and on social media. So the book was just released December 8th, so it's relatively new, and we hope it really adds value to people's lives. We think decision-making might be the most important asset we have as human beings, and not too many people have thought that much about it, and we want to change that.
Well, Jim and Sheila, or Sheila and Jim, thank you very much for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
I found this book fascinating. I would encourage you to pick up a copy and start implementing the strategies described in the book. Take a moment, go to careerpivot.com, sign up for the weekly Career Pivot Insights newsletter, which is sent out every Sunday. You will get a weekly update on this podcast, white papers, and new blog posts. I recently published my latest white paper, Ageism, The Last Acceptable Bias. While there, do not forget to check out the Career Pivot community, which can be found at careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. You'll find Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-307. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and lots of other places where podcasts can be found. In fact, this podcast can be found on the Repurpose Your Career podcast channel on YouTube. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.